check first whether we really have the Quran for this meeting. But I'm learning. I'm not going to speak according to the rules, but I have to satisfy myself even if we don't. It allows us to continue. Secondly, I'm part of the committee. I'm not outside the committee, so we do in any way have the Quran. Let me thank everyone present today, and we only have one item on the agenda as to our request, except then one issue that we'll have to deal with after, which was supposed to deal with anyway first, which is the minutes of the last meeting. But I'm sure we will deal with those first in after we have released the department. The second thing is that, let me thank honorable members for their attendance in the strike plan. And I think your contribution is highly valuable, and was highly valuable even in the meeting itself, as well as to the department who came to make sure that they do the presentation on the program of the department. We hope probably in the next meeting we will then put a concrete proposal of the program as agreed in the threat plan, and then members can be able to look at it and adopt it as we move forward. But you'll remember there were preliminary areas that we agreed. But because we're a threat plan, we're not a committee. We're in a more, we can call it a workshop. And therefore, it will require this committee to finally endorse the program that would have been agreed to. Do we have any apologies?
Good morning, everyone. We've got apologies from Honorable Malema, Honorable Jafta, and Honorable Ndaka. Thank you. I'm still waiting for the email. The their secretary just called me. They will send the email.
Okay. Generally, we all agree that if an apology is not written, we just note the apology. We proceed. Can we allow then the department to make the presentation? Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Member. We are going to present in the technical regulations of Shelter as a whole and development of South Africa, with special emphasis on the same issue. The presentation is outlined as shown on the slide. We will touch on the background and then the legislative framework, and also address the issue of what is changed, and then what is the change, and what is the regulatory, and we'll look at key elements of the regulation which has been passing, and then we'll look at the benefits of shelter, and conclude the presentation. The background behind this regulation is that in February 2011, the DMR imposed a moratorium on the processing of new applications for
the conveyances, payments, technical cooperation, payments, exploration rights, and production rights, and respect of shareholders, where people have shown interest in terms of applying for exploration and exploitation of shale gas. Following that, an interdepartmental team, which is basically a technical team, was convened to investigate the concerns which were raised by people and provide advice to government on this matter. The investigation was concluded, and the key issues which came out of the investigation was that we need to look at augmenting the current regulation on the exploration and the production of oil and gas. This was also accompanied by a recommendation that we also have to ensure that there is a coexistence in respect of SKA, the square kilometer array, and shale gas development. This committee embarked on developing technical regulations for petroleum and exploration exploitation to address this issue. The augmented gas identified in the current regulatory framework governing exploration and exploitation of the petroleum resources were particularly in respect of hydraulic fracturing. And once that was completed, the information was then gazetted. The regulations were released for public comment. And the department is now in the process of incorporating those comments which the public has transmitted. We thought that we need to highlight this slide because most people think that, okay, fine, you know, we don't have enough regulatory framework. There are quite a number of regulatory and legislation which basically will be used in terms of regulating hydraulic fracturing. Some of these, I mean, we have highlighted this National Water Act, very important, a critical one, because water is a key issue here in terms of hydraulic fracturing. The National Environmental Management Act, a very, very important act. Also, the Astronomy Geographic Advantage Act, this will help us in terms of the SKA, this coexistence we're talking about, coexistence between SKA and shale gas development. The National Environmental Management Waste Act also can be used to regulate this activity. These regulations are meant to augment existing legislative framework, as I mentioned earlier. They are not exhaustive on their own and must be read with a number of those legislations which I've highlighted earlier. What is shale gas? A lot of people would like to know, what is this shale gas? It is a form of natural gas that is trapped within shale formation. Shales are basically rocks. It's almost in a simple way, you could just say it's like a compacted mud of some form. Very, very, got very fine grain particles, as compared to other rocks which are associated with shales, that could be sandstones, which of course, you know, the grains there are much larger. Now, shale layer typically lies within 1,500 to 4,000 meters below surface, and is often overlain by thick and tight geological formation that may act as a barrier to protect groundwater. So the exploitation of shale gas is often targeted at greater depth, the depth of 1,500. Those are the depths where it is targeted for. because it is found in low or no permeable formation, its production is enhanced by hydraulic fracturing. These shale rocks, they've got a very low permeable, that is, the movement of water through shale, it doesn't move as if as it would move in other rock formation like sandstone. Shale gas, therefore, requires special processes to stimulate the production of gas. This diagram basically shows how the process of hydraulic fracturing takes place. It's a section. The layers there, this will be the layers will be like layers of rock. And this one is a very important one. It shows where, drinking water is, would mostly be found. This is plus minus 300 meters below surface. That is where the drinking water is. As you go deeper, at around, say, 1.5 kilometers there, you don't find drink water. This water which is there, if you find the water, it's not used for drinking water. It's always puddle water, very old water, which occurs there. But the critical water, which is used by communities, which is used by farmers, it will occur in this area, which is called the aquifer. And the on the right-hand side of the slide, it shows what will happen. See, firstly, a well will be drilled, vertical well is drilled, and then it's drilled at the horizontal level, okay, horizontally. From there, this horizontal part is perforated. And to extract this gas, we have to pump those fluids into the well, which will then fracture the formation to release the gas, which will then be trapped and used for economic activity. The use of hydraulic fracturing is perceived to have the attendant risk of polluting sources of drink water by fracturing fluids and or methane and induced seismic events. Current industry well construction and integrity practices contained in the API, which is a yardstick in the industry, ensures that the protection of underground sources of drinking water from impacts related to oil and gas exploration and production activities, including hydraulic fracturing. I think what is critical here is that there are yardsticks there. The international world, when it comes to issues of hydraulic fracturing, they have benchmarked themselves, the yardsticks which people follow. And the key objective of this technical regulation is to ensure that we also utilize those yardsticks so that we can operate like other countries and ensure that we put the best standard for the exploitation of shale gas in the country. The aspects of the draft regulation will not apply only in respect of hydraulic fracturing, but will apply generally to issues relating to petroleum exploration and production, but we will be emphasizing on hydraulic fracturing, because as you know that there is oil and gas in a prospect in the country. So this regulation will apply in that regard. Stimulation of a reservoir by way of hydraulic fracturing is not confined also to this unconventional gas or exploration and production operation. Also applies to conventional gas, as I stated earlier. This diagram basically shows the difference between conventional and unconventional gas. If you look at the left-hand side of this slide, be sure that a typical conventional gas, if you be trapped in this reservoir, all what you do is you really intersect the reservoir and you extract your oil and gas. This is what is happening in countries like Nigeria, what is happening in countries like Mozambique. It's a typical one. Okay? Now, if you go towards the extreme right of the slide, we have got what is called tight gas. Okay, it is a kind of a conventional natural gas reservoir, but you might find that it is very difficult to extract that gas. So even in that case, you might have to use hydraulic fracturing, okay, to stimulate that well. And the other one is on surface, coal bed methane. Coal bed methane, in South Africa, we do have coal bed methane in our coal. It occurs in our coal, and the gas is there. And you could use it to stimulate that gas if the need arises, if you really would like to extract some of the gas there. But it's not often something which is utilized, unlike in terms of shale gas exploration and exploitation. If you look at shale gas here, which is this diagram there, you'll have your vertical well, as I stated earlier on, and then you intersect the layer which will be containing your gas. Then you drill horizontally, you insert your perforated casing there, and then what will happen there, you pump in the fluid to fracture the rock, and you extract the gas. Basically, that just shows you the various types of gas occurrences, which can, in fact, in South Africa, we have the possibility of using all four types of the occurrence in terms of gas. Now, some of the key issues which have been captured in the regulations, I'll touch on this. The first one relates to issues around geology. The applicants of the operators will be requested to have a thorough understanding of the geological formation, the rock. You know? If I go back to this slide, you know, applicants will have to have an indication of a situation like this, of saying, what do we have below there? Before they even drill, they must have an indication. They have to provide that information to us. Yes, it might not be 100%, but they'll have to provide us that information, because they have got geological information. There are drill holes which have been drilled in the past. They have got to provide this section to government so that government can see. Then they can show us how they are going to manage this situation. So the regulation will prescribe that they have to understand this and provide a government with this information. So that's the basic of understanding what is called geohydrology. It's the heart of everything. We need to be on the same page with the applicants. Government and the applicants, we have to be on the same page on this thing in terms of understanding what needs to happen. And geology will form the basis of everything. Now, the other issue is the casing. Okay? Let me go back to this slide, because it's a very important slide. Look at this slide. The issue here is that we need to ensure that we protect this aquifer, this blue stuff, the aquifer. So even whatever would be in this other underlying rock. So what is then critical there is the integrity of the casing must be very, very, it is very important. So we need to ensure that we have got good standards which will manage the integrity of the casing. Because what we do here, you drill, after drilling, you put in the casing. So we have to ensure that the standards can actually protect the environment, especially when it comes to groundwater. So this will be prescribed, those standards. This just shows the casing. The first casing is known as the conductor casing. The left side of the slide shows that after you have drilled the hole, you will then on the right-hand side there, insert your casing there, and then pump cement here to actually protect the interface between the rock and the casing, and ensure that that actually seals any movement of water from the rock. The next one is called surface casing. Okay, so what happens is you have got your first casing, you drill your hole, as you see in the left-hand side. From there, you insert your casing to also protect that environment that is between your rocks and the well. You continue doing that with the next casing, and you continue to do that with what is called the production casing. The production casing will have what is known as the perforated intervals in it. Those perforated areas, that's where water or fluid will be pumped through to fracture the rock. So the heart of drilling a well is around ensuring that integrity around that well is of high standard. So everything will have to be prescribed, everything will have to be monitored to ensure that we protect the groundwater. The cement requirements and the compressive tests which will be undertaken will also be prescribed, and there will also be a monitoring team which will be working hand in hand with the operators when it comes to whole issues of ensuring that we have got the high quality casing, high quality cement, a proper compressive test being undertaken. The other part is around water resource assessment and monitoring. This basically would require that a baseline water assessment be undertaken. It is extremely important that we understand what was the environment prior to any activity taking place. So the operators will be required to undertake that study. And from the government itself will also ensure that they take samples to ensure that that information is the proper information to ensure that when we start to pick up any type of pollution later on, we will say, no, this was our baseline. This is now going to happen. So that is extremely critical, because if you look at, I will give an example, in the mining industry, of especially in the Vets area, where we have got acid mine drainage. If you ask people, what was the baseline? What was there before? We say we have polluted this water, but what was there before? We don't have that information. We can extrapolate. We can say it was more or less like this, but we don't have that information. Now, if we're going to say to someone, you have polluted the environment, then you have to say, you have polluted the environment because the situation was like this. So this is what is going to happen there. We will all know what is the current situation before any activities take place. The protection of water resource setbacks. There will be buffer zones which will be set to protect existing wetlands, to protect existing water wells which are used by communities. We need to ensure that those water wells are protected. So we'll come with a buffer zone to ensure that that is protected. And that is a very important part of the process. Disclosure. All operators will be requested to disclose the liquid or the fluid which they are going to use for hydraulic fracturing. People have got various ideas, various proposals. They will have to disclose what is there so that we can look at their impact to the environment. Induced seismic assessment, they will have to continuously monitor seismic activities in that area, so that we can actually look at issues around the risk associated with seismicity. Fluid disposal, there will be also prescribed way in which those fluids are disposed. This basically will also require a kind of a partnership between the operators and government. That is very, very critical. The other important one, people are always saying, where will you find this water? Where will you find this water? The Karoo hasn't got water, right? Or the water there in the Karoo is scarce. Yes, certainly. That is why we're saying that the applicant will have to indicate where they will source this water. Some people have indicated that they would source the water from the sea. They will have to indicate as what is, how are they going to source that water, the impact that will have in terms of the environment as a whole. Protection of astronomy activities, I've already stated that, is extremely, extremely important while looking at the whole issue of coexistence of SKA and shale gas development. Monitoring of operation, all phases of operation will be monitored. All phases. There will be a monitoring team comprising critical departments which will be monitoring this activity. This will also, the team will also draw on expertise from institutions, a petroleum agency, the Council for Geoscience. They've been part of the process, in fact. CSIR will also participate in this process. So our institutions, especially our science institutions, will be extremely important as part of this process. Hydrographic fluid must also be monitored to ensure that it is confined to the target zone, and any indication of migration will result in suspension of operation. That is, we have got a clause there which addresses that. There will be continual monitoring. And as I said earlier on, if you know your original baseline and we have put in place systems to continuously monitor the process, I can't see why we can fail to suspend those operations when that happens. And the interesting part of it here is that we have got key stakeholders who are actually looking at this from various angles, the environment, water, DST, Department of Energy will also be there. So it is extremely important that the monitoring team continuously monitors the situation to ensure that any challenges which are picked up are immediately addressed. In terms of related seismicity, the Council for Geoscience, which is an institution which is tasked to monitor seismic activities on a 24-hour basis in South Africa. I think we all know about them. They monitor it. They've got some of the best equipment in the world. They will be part of the process monitoring activities there. The benefits for shale gas, this is an extremely important area there. I mean, we all know that in South Africa, where we source our energy, most of our energy is sourced from coal. Okay? This shale gas has got the potential to provide us with another source of energy. So basically increasing the sources of energy for the country. It's cost-effective energy source in a way. It can also help in terms of electricity generation. It will contribute to GDP and increase in foreign direct investment, improve balance of payment, and development of new gas industry. There are a number of activities which are associated with shale gas development in terms of trading in gas resources, provision of industrial, commercial, and domestic energy, all around localization. Okay? If we can ensure that it is exploited in South Africa, it's used in South Africa, it will play a major role in changing the economy of this country. That is why some people are even saying it's got the potential to be a game changer for this country to address our challenges which we are facing. Electricity generation, it can actually be used for that. Conversion to liquid fuel to use as an automotive fuel, energy feedstock for fertilizer production. These are just some of the areas where the shale gas can be used. In terms of socio-economic issues, infrastructure development, it will bring in new infrastructure to create employment opportunities, skills even for the local people there, skills development and training and business opportunities. It's a new industry for this country, if I may put it that way. If we can prove the reserve, that will be a new industry, new activities in the economy will take place. The draft regulation, once finalized, will result in a regulatory framework that ensures safe extraction of gas, which will contribute to diversification of South Africa's energy mix, energy security supply, significantly boost South Africa's economy, and have a positive effect on the GDP. I thought I should conclude with that bullet that saying that, you know, the success of this project is in the committee which should be in existence, which is actually currently there. It will continuously monitor this environment. Critical. We have got DMR, DOE, Department of Water and Sanitation, Science and Technology, Department of Environment, and relevant institutions, science institutions like CSIR. They have got the expertise to assist us. Council for Geoscience, they have got the expertise to assist us. They have done it in assisting government when it comes to issues such as acid mine drainage, which we are now addressing. And this brings me to the end of the presentation. I thank you, Honorable Chair. I thank you, Honorable Members. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, CJ. Let me try to apply the rules of finance. I know protocol-wise. Is there any other issue that in your team you want to add? Now that you are questioning the intelligence and the supply of information by the DG, in the absence of that, so you have represented your team very well. That's what it says. Mr. A. Stazer. Welcome to the committee. Finally, you've made it. Thank you very much. To one member that has been, we are running short of. Now I'm sure we are a full complement. Honorable members, here is the presentation that you have requested. Are there any questions of clarity or comments? I'm generous today. You can ask questions of clarity and comments. Honorable Loriva. Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Mafolo. Honorable Matlala. Honorable Stephen. Honorable Mandel. See, you are speaking all of you today. I didn't know that I've got such a highly educated committee that can just grapple with shale gas within the first day of presentation. I can see. Okay.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. DG, I've got lots of questions. Do you want me to ask them in two rounds, or shall I give them all to you up front?
Can I allow you to not ask more than three questions?
Three?
Not more than three. You will come back, don't worry. We still have got time.
Good.
Okay. Don't worry.
Thanks,
there's a song, I don't know whether you know Zulu, that says, so la la la. So don't worry.
Good.
I'm saying for now, that's three.
Okay, right. DG, thanks for the presentation. When are we going to see the final version of the regulations? It's not been clear whether the regulations are complete or not. The minister appeared to indicate that the regulations were completed and about to be presented. So could you give us an idea of where we are in that process? Are they complete? Are they still being discussed? And have there been significant changes from these draft regulations that we have? Second question concerns the monitoring committee, which I'm sure you would agree is one of the key areas here. You gave us a list of some of the organizations which are on it, government departments and so on. I don't think you mentioned agriculture, so that was one of the questions. Is agriculture on there? You also talked about Council for Geoscience, CSIR, as some of the institutions who would also be on that committee. Do you have a final list of who is going to be on that committee? Or is it going to change from time to time? Here's my comment. This is a very controversial process and likely to remain so. Do you not think it would help the credibility of the process if there was some involvement by civil society and there are any number of organizations who could be called on to be part of the process, from people at NMMU and UCT, who I believe are very interested in it, through to organizations like the Water Institute? Have you considered, or and would you consider involving them in the process? I think transparency might add greatly to the credibility of this thing. And also on that monitoring committee, who is going to have the final decision? If agriculture, for example, objects to something, or environment, are they going to be able to stop a process if they think it's too risky? And a sort of a sub-question to that, what's the difference between the monitoring committee and the monitoring team that actually goes into the field? How comprehensive and how much of a how much time and how many people are going to be in that team in the field? Are they just going to visit it once a week, once a month? Are they going to be there all the time, particularly during the initial drilling phase? Thank you.
You are a lawyer by profession, isn't it? Not
guilty.
You should be. You must consider that. But I can see your, the way you smuggle your questions to be more than true. I hear for the first time that there's a sub-question to a question. And then a comment, and then within the comment there's a question again. But well done. You did very well. Honorable Schmidt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could I firstly ask, one can, I suppose, safely accept that our Australian counterparts, insofar as the SKA is concerned, is an interested party. And my question is, have their views been considered? And if so, what are their views? Because I would think that would be quite important. Secondly, the issue affecting the objective supervision of hydraulic fracturing by this monitoring group. Is it foreseen that there be a continuous monitoring oversight function by this monitoring group, this independent working group? Then thirdly, the views of other departments who have not been included into that monitoring working group, and the views of affected provinces, and I would guess that's probably the Western Cape and Northern Cape, have their views been obtained, and are they being considered? And yeah, thank you very much.
Contain. Otherwise, next time I'm going to give you numbers. You know.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank the DG for the informative presentation. My question is, how long does it take to process the application? And then the other one, as we know that South Africa is a water scarce country, and water to being polluted is a threat to us as a country. Who's going to be responsible after all these processes when water is polluted? Who's going to take the responsibility of that? And then what measures are going to be taken? And then if it might happen that water is polluted, what measures are on place to make sure that the community surrounding that area is not going to suffer? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I've noted some of these things. I don't know what I can tell. Thank you. You, DJ, you spoke of the department is in the process of consulting the interested and affected communities. When do you think you can finalize this process of consultations with the communities? The other one, Chair, it is with regard to this shale gas, you know. The DG was actually telling us, teaching us of some of the things that we don't know with regard to shale gas. Can you unpack, actually, what is this thing? You spoke of something trapped within the shale formation. Some of us were lost here, speaking of science. Yeah? Can you unpack it so that we can understand some of the things when we knock off here, DG? The last one, DG, it is with regard to the gross domestic product, as to whether how much will it be contribute to the gross domestic product, the boosting of the economy of South Africa. How much? Maybe some millions of monies or how much? But maybe you can tell us what is it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Let me first apologize for my, this is the alternative committee for me, and usually this coincides with some of my primary committees. On this, there is potential for shale gas. I think we're on the same geological complex as Mozambique, so there should be potential for us. But isn't this overinflated? What is the... It was last claimed that we have over 400 trillion cubic feet of natural gases. But isn't that overinflated as the jobs that can be created with shale gas and also the part that it will play in the economy to justify maybe the cost involved? Then, I actually did study engineering, but so long ago when Yannie Smuts was still a corporal, so the shale gas wasn't even heard from then. Although the presenter explained of all the sleeving and the precautions taken and the balls, perforation still takes place, and there is proof of that. There is proof already that there is contamination taking place in Limpopo now, in the Karoo, and the immediate environment does get affected. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. like to thank the department, as led by the DG, for their presentation, an informative one for that matter. But, Chair, I'd like to really gain clarity on the issue of shale gas, because it seems to be the game changer, particularly in this sector of mining. How many jobs are we talking about that will really be created out of this? And in terms of what the Honourable Member has just said, what are the quantities are we speaking of? So that we don't find ourselves just chasing a few hundred jobs, whereas the potential is actually hundreds of thousands or a million jobs. So I'm just trying to understand the potential that is there in terms of the value, and what would it be, the direct impact on the economy in terms of job creation. But I also want to pose a question there, Chair, in terms of what has been raised by Honourable Mafolo, the threat and danger towards the pollution of water. As a country having scarce access to clean drinkable water, how certain are we that the environment and the water will be protected, and the operators that are coming on to, how will they ensure sabotage, Chair, can I be protected, please?
This one, I can't even explain myself to speak. As a person who is part of traditional leadership, I may not know what powers do you have supernaturally. Continue.
Thank you.
I hope it won't come again.
Thank you. Would want to know exactly the operators, where they are sourcing out the water, DJ, and how certain are we that if they are saying they are sourcing out the water out the sea, it won't be underground water that they would be utilizing. Then again, Chairperson, I'm interested in the interdepartmental or interministerial team that is working on this. What are the concerns in terms of various other departments? And I'll pick on the Department of Environmental Affairs for that matter. What are the issues that they've identified to be concerned on this matter of shale gas? But also, you've spoken about the energy sector, that this could be a contributor to electricity for that matter. How many power stations can we realize out of this process? And what would be the direct impact on the challenges we've been having on electricity shortages? Lastly, Chair, we've recently experienced, particularly in the northwest and in the Gauteng area, these earthquakes and tremors. How certain are we that with this operation and drilling, we won't be finding ourselves experiencing even worse tremors and earthquakes in the region? Thank you.
Okay, DJ. I'm sure you can respond to the question.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. Firstly, Honourable Smith, mentioning the issue of Australia, whether we have consulted Australia. At this stage, the issues of SKA, they are international issues. People interact at that level through the Department of Science and Technology. What we are focusing in terms of the regulations currently is to ensure that that coexistence is realized. We have engaged on this matter with Department of Science and Technology. There's actually a special team which is working hard on this matter, whereby they're identifying various, you know, they're looking at various scenarios, they're looking at buffer zones around this area. And I think in terms of communicating with the people who are overseeing the SKA, that will take place through Department of Science and Technology. It will not necessarily be specifically the Australia. It will actually be the international body which is overseeing it, because there are quite a number of stakeholders. They have to be comfortable with what you are going to put forward as a proposal. But the heart of it here is that we'll have to come with buffer zones around the case. There will be areas whereby we say this is a no-go area, and we protect that area, and the explorers would focus in certain areas. That is the principle which we are looking at in terms of this coexistence. The interdepartmental monitoring team, the departments which I've listed, those are the key departments which have been involved. Through the processes of government, we have interacted with other departments through the clusters and this. And, you know, once the process of real monitoring takes place, we will incorporate other departments which are also critical. You talked about a university. We have interacted, especially with the University of the Free State. We have discussed some of the issues with them. We will continue to interact, consult critical people. That's how we always operate in government. I always refer that to, you know, how we came up with solutions around acid mine drainage. We didn't do them unilaterally as government. We brought in experts. We talked to University of Itotafrae. They came in, they helped us. We talked to University of the Free State, they came in and helped us. Similarly here, we have even the initial report, if you look at the initial report, how it was compiled after the moratorium, we consulted out there with experts in this field. People who have got ideas, and they gave us ideas, and we will continue to engage them in terms of going forward. We can't do it alone. The people must see this as an opportunity for South Africa. I'm saying it's not only an economic opportunity, it is also an opportunity in terms of fostering or advancing our research forward. It creates huge opportunity for the young people when to get into research, you know, from geology to economics, engineering. It will create those opportunities. So we will need partnerships with institutions, universities. A number of universities have already approached us there to work with them there. So it will be a collaborative process. And I'm seeing a lot of master's degrees, PhDs being produced through this process. It's an opportunity for the county. Honorable Mfulo, in terms of how long is the process going to take place, what's going to happen now is we have this draft regulation which has been published. We have received a number of inputs from interested and affected parties, quite a number of inputs. And then we will be embarking on information session, consulting with community in the coming month if all goes well, which we were hoping in September or so. And once that is done, we will then incorporate the input into the draft regulations and released. We can't start to process the application before we finalize this process. And that process, once that is done, it will be a very, very important process. It's going to involve engagement with the applicants, especially in terms of how they are going to address the environment. That is very critical. There will be a lot of engagement from government. They must also still follow the current prescribed processes of applying in terms of consulting with communities. There are processes which are prescribed, so they also have to do that. But there will be lots of engagement. Now, once we are satisfied, then the rights can then be granted. If the possibilities of water being polluted, this is the heart of the issue of this regulation. We're saying, let's protect the water, groundwater. Let's protect it because it is scarce in that area. So there will be intense monitoring. As I said earlier on in the presentation, the bottom line is we'll have to have baseline information. And once the baseline information is there, the operators will provide us with regular information on the qualities of water. And they will be required to sample the water and provide us with that information. And on top of that, competent authorities will also, or institutions will also go and do their sampling. So we'll have Department of Water Affairs, we'll have Department of, we'll have institutions such as the Council for Future Science and CSIR also involved in terms of monitoring the water. And I'm confident that in the event that there are problems, they will be picked up quite early, and the processes will be stopped if there's any threat to the water in that area. Okay, in terms of consultation, when are we going to finalize them? I've touched on them. The issue of what did she get from Honorable Matlan, maybe I must go back to that diagram there. If you look at this diagram, from here, where I'm showing this green, this will be like a layer of rock, more or less on surface. And then you have got various types of rocks as you go down. These rocks were formed over millions of years. millions of years. And within some of these rocks, there will be gas which is trapped. But the shale gas one is trapped within these rocks which are called shale. They are very fine grained. That's why I refer to, if you look at mud, mud is very fine grained, very, very fine grained. Okay. In fact, if a section of this nature, if you look at where we're going to fracture the rock, it will be the shale. Below that shale, you will most finally find what is called siltstones, and then below the siltstones, you will perhaps find sandstones. That's how the sequence is. You find the coarser rocks being below, and as you go up, you find the finer rocks. Okay. Then the same sequence starts again. You find the coarser rocks, they become fine as you go up. So you find sequences of these rocks. They're like packages. Okay. Now, the shale ones were the one which is okay in the very fine zones. That zone has got fine particles of stone, very fine. And within those particles, you will find this gas being trapped. Now, you cannot just release that gas. Even if you drill straight through the rock, you can't even release that gas. You must fracture the rock so that this gas can then be released from those particles. That is why it's called shale gas. So if it had occurred in rocks called sandstone, we'd perhaps call it sandstone gas. But this one, it happens to be occurring in shales. These rocks are called shales. Okay? And it's called shale gas. If it was in another type of rock, it would have been maybe sandstone gas or quasi gas. That's the difference. GDP. You know, at this stage, it is estimated, the initial estimate was that we have about 480 TCF, trillion cubic feet. That's just an estimate. But this process requires detailed exploration to take place, because that's just an indication. You still have to do drilling, understand the geology, and then quantify exactly what are your resources and what are your reserves. Once we have reached the stage of reserve, then we can say, look, the economy is like this. Okay. But people have looked at it and say, what is the worst that could happen? A lot of studies have undertaken. A petroleum agency, the Council for Geoscience have done some studies on this. And some people are saying, look, you know, the conservatively say we say 30 TCF. Some people are saying we could be looking at 30 TCF. But even 30 TCF on its own is actually extremely good for the country. So if we say we don't have 485, you get 30 TCF. Because if you look at Moscow was started with 1 TCF. So we will be having 30 Moscow for the simple way of looking at it. If it's 100, we'll have 100 Moscow. This will certainly change the economy of the country. That's how I would like to look at it. There are people who have played around with the a possible GDP contribution. But I would say let's look at it from that point, because we are still at the stage whereby there are uncertainties in terms of the amount of gas which are there. But I see it as a positive thing for the country. Even if we have got 30 TCF, it will change the country, the economy of the country. If you look at what is happening in the USA in terms of shelters, some people are saying, in fact, it has contributed to the current economic growth of the USA because of shelter. So it's a potential which this country should look at and see how it can be utilized to change the life of the people of the country. This brings me to what the Honorable Oosthuizen said earlier on, of is this figure inflated? Well, it is an estimated figure, which is based on a few holes which were drilled in the past. And people looked at the rocks there and estimated that this is more or less what will happen for 485. But other people have looked at it differently and said, look, I think let's be conservative. Some people say 30 TCF. But what is important for the country is say, let's go out there, let's drill, let's understand what is there for the country. And this process will answer that. Will it affect the environment? Well, I think in terms of affecting the environment, it will not necessarily affect the environment negatively if we pursue this process in a responsible manner. If we pursue it in a responsible manner, if we put in place what is being proposed in the regulation in terms of the standards which have been put there, I've interacted with some industry people when talking informally about this whole issue. They, when they saw those regulations, they are comfortable. They are comfortable. If those standards are adhered to, we will protect the environment. The monitoring team will also have to play a very important role. And interaction with academics on this matter, working together, if we all work together, I don't see us threatening the environment. I can't see that happening. It's all around ensuring that when we start this new industry, we all work together, collaborate in the process, and monitor and ensure that we effectively implement what needs to be done. The, I think, because the Honorable Mandela talked about the how many jobs. It also touches on what I referred earlier on of saying, if you look at the mosques, I think it is estimated that it has created about 1,600,000 direct jobs. But it's not about the direct jobs alone. The multiplier effect that this industry has in the economy of South Africa, if it starts, it will be huge. It will be huge. It will impact in terms of if it we decide to use it for electricity, it will change a lot of things. There will be jobs in that environment. If it is used for other activities, there will also be jobs in that environment. So it will change the way the economy of South Africa is currently in many ways, in terms of the direct job, in terms of the indirect job. How certain are we that the water will be protected? I think that those casings like I showed you there, they aim at protecting the water. I'm quite certain that water will be protected. It can be done. This is not a new technology. It has been there for plus minus 20 years. It has been perfected over time. And I'm sure if we implement the available technology which is out there and we ensure that people adhere to those standards and we put that monitoring team in place, there will not be a serious problem. In fact, I can't see any problem. We can do it. I'm quite certain when it comes to this matter. The source of water. Yeah, but it's why in the regulations we're saying they must disclose where they source this water. They will have to inform us how they're going to solve this one. That is why the process of the application is so important. We'll be interacting with them. If we are not happy as government, we're not going to allow them. We're not going to allow them. If they say to us, we'll solve the water from the sea, they must show us how are they going to mitigate against the negative impact that will be associated with it. How are they going to mitigate that? The environmental issues which are related to that. So we'll have to engage them on that matter. And also, as I said, in terms of the chemicals which will be used in the fracturing, they have to disclose that in terms of the regulation. The concerns from other departments, this process from the onset, those key departments have been part of it. Many hours went into it. And it was it, it, is so important and very, to me it was so interesting because each and every department which was participating was ensuring that their mandate is actually performed. They were protecting issues around the environment when it comes to department environment. And no, we have to ensure, and a lot of debate went into compiling this regulation. Water, Department of Water, many hours went into discussing how the water should be protected. That is why eventually it was then agreed that we'll have to come with buffer zones. That proposal came from Department of Water first, but we need to ensure that where there are wells which have been drilled, they need to be protected. Where the municipalities in those areas, some of the municipalities in those areas rely on groundwater. We'll have to define those areas and come with buffer zones and say this is a no-go area. Similarly with the SKAs, almost the same situation. So you need this cooperation from all state departments so that we can ensure that this is properly implemented. And that brings that checks and balances. Not like the Department of Mineral Resources to just go there alone and start to say, no, we will issue the license. It's not at all. We have all these departments are going to be part of this process. They will have to look at it from what they have provided as in terms of the regulation. That's why we have got this regulation. They played an important role when it comes to issues of water, especially water affairs there. Because that was a critical one. Environment affairs, they looked at issues from environmental point of view. Many emails were exchanged about this issue until we came to where we are now. The issue of the number of power stations, I would say for now, we haven't yet identify how many power stations will be there, but basically it will be something which we'll have to look at. If government decides, look, we're going to use this gas to generate electricity, then we look at that. That is why we have got Department of Energy also there involved in this process to guide us on the way forward in terms of the utilization. On the issue of earthquakes, we will continuously monitor earthquakes in that area. The Council for Social Science, in fact, from the onset, when we developed the first report, which was released, the technical report, they were part of this process. They are giving us advice on issues of the earthquakes, on tremors. What will happen, they will have to monitor there and come with the risk zonation map, looking at risk. If the risk starts to increase, then we'll have to revisit the standard of the casing. Because that's how you mitigate against earthquakes. Countries like Japan, they mitigate against earthquakes in the same way. They monitor the earthquakes, they identify, they come with risk zonation maps, then they'll say that in this area, this is how engineering what should be in terms of property development, in terms of infrastructure development. In the same vein, this will happen. They will monitor the risk, and if the risk increases, will then revisit the standards which are there and say, okay, here are the standards. We believe that now let's use this type of standards in terms of casing, in terms of the system. That is also very, very, very important.
I hope you will see the need now that this becomes your primary commitment, not a secondary.
Thank you, Chair. I could see that should have been primary.
Okay, and then the Honorable Lorena, it's your sub question.
I proceed. Thank you, Chief. I don't think it's entirely true. Contamination does take place. Injection drilling, or fragging as it is called, works on a principle that very high pressure water is injected into solid rock formations to have gas escape. And apart from being the 31st driest country in the world, they use, and I'm quite sure I'm right, they use about 20 million liters of water at each operation. And, you know, this will also affect our water resources that I think somebody else here has mentioned. And the water does. It was mentioned that water, seawater might be used, which will make it uneconomical to do fracking. Then further to that, I can just mention that when they were exploring in Limpopo, water holes, boreholes as far as 3 kilometers away was affected. Water was found to be contaminated. So it does happen. The water does really, the environment does get affected. And also what I said about overinflating, it was claimed at first that our shale gas reserve stands at about, I've made a note here, at 485 TCF, or trillion cubic feet. And our own scientist, Professor Harold Winkler from UCT, on energy, estimated it at now only 40 TCF. So that's a significant reduce on what was originally claimed. So that's why I asked, does it justify the cost? Because this is going to cost billions as well. And it's also not a short-term solution for our energy crisis. This will take years to explore.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I want to go back to the issue of monitoring and this monitoring committee. Is the list of departments and organizations set down anywhere? Is it set down in regulation, or is that going to be an ad hoc decision made by the minister? Will the minister decide that this committee is now going to consist of the following people and organizations? Is that going to change? What's going to govern that? That's my question. Following on from that, I want to talk about the on-site monitoring. You have indicated that there will be a degree of self-monitoring by the drilling companies. But can you give us an idea of how often and how closely monitoring teams will watch over what is going on? As I said originally, is it going to be once a week, once a month, once per drilling operation? How is that exactly going to work? And the third question is, are you ready in terms of capacity in the DMR? It's a highly technical process. Do you have those people on hand to be part of those monitoring teams? If you don't have them on hand, what are you doing to make sure that you have sufficient expert capacity to monitor properly?
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. The issue of saying it is not entirely true that the water will not be contaminated, Honorable, yes, then I can assure you that this process which we are putting in place, which is not there, that is why we are augmenting the regulation, the regulatory framework. It's not there. It is meant to mitigate against that. It is meant to mitigate, and everything depends on how you implement it. And I mean, scientifically and engineering-wise, I can't see a better way of addressing this matter. Engineering-wise, we are saying we will bring in steel casing with standards which are on par with what the world is doing out there. Tell me if you can do better than that. We are saying in terms of cement, we will ensure that the standards which are, you know, on the same level as what the rest of the world is doing. Tell me if you can do better than that. Okay? And one thing, on top of that, we will put a monitoring team. We will put a monitoring team. This is to ensure that we protect the integrity of the well. If that is not in place, there will be challenges. But one thing, we're going to ensure that that happens. That happens when the applications are processed. They will have to adhere to those standards. They will sign the documentation to adhere to those standards. Okay? And we will keep on monitoring issues of seismicity, as I've mentioned earlier on. In the event that we realize that the risk is high, we will increase the standards to ensure that that does not happen. And I can assure you that when the applications are processed, we look at all the critical things of sustainable development. We look at critical issues around sustainable development. That is environment. That's environment. We're going to look at that. We're going to look at whether it's economic or not. You are saying that if they get water from the sea, it might not be economic. Certainly, in the application, we look at the economic viability of the project.
Wait. I never knew that there was a food school here.
I'm trying to look at the younger people who might be responsible for the preschool.
One issue, Honorable Stephen, is that I'm just saying the battle of scientists or engineers or geologists, I can see.
Today you mustn't fight with me. It's our youth leader's birthday, President Mangosuthu Buthelezi, it's his birthday today. Youth leader, he's only 85 years old.
No, take that one, the other side. Say that is 58. No, say congratulations to him. At least you came here, we recognize that he's been born as one of the outstanding leaders. Happy birthday to Mtanaka Pindale. Dr. Ramon.
Okay.
Rhonda Zuma said we've got enough time, and then we end up using this time because we've got time.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. The issue there was around whether it's true or not that the contamination will take place. And I'm saying, you know, currently we don't have any standard. We don't have any standard in terms of protecting the wells for oil and gas. And this is the beginning of ensuring that we bring in those standards. And we have benchmarked this standard against world standards, which are used by other countries. And I'm saying, if we implement them effectively and accordingly, I think we will address any challenge which we will encounter. From the engineering point of view, I think we have got one of the best standards which we are putting in place there in terms of protecting the integrity of the well in respect of the casing itself, okay? The cement itself. We are saying that they have to adhere to those standards. If anything goes wrong, we will pick it up because we have got the monitoring team which will be monitoring the situation. But also on top of that, we also have other departments which are administering legislation, like the Water Act. Okay? It's administered by the Department of Water and Sanitation. They will also be playing their role when it comes to this. So I'm quite confident that the approach which we are following as government or as a country, it will ensure that we exploit shale gas in a very responsible way. I'm quite confident when it comes to that. And also, the economics of it, where you say that if you have got to source water from the sea, there will be challenges in terms of the economics of the project. We do assess that as part of evaluating an application. We look at environmental issues, we look at economic issues, very critical issues, which we are going to look at. If it is not economically viable, they have got to show the cash flow to us, you know, what the cost of sourcing the water, what are the profitability. We will not approve the project if it is not economically viable. That is how we are going to approach this matter, because each and every project must show the cost which they are going to incur, the revenue, the projected revenue, and how they are going to realize profit. It's the heart of every business, and the companies which are in this environment, I doubt if they will want to get into an environment where they are going to make loss, but we'll ensure that we monitor that. I'm just raising it that there's no company which can enter into a project while they know that they are not going to make profit. We will ensure that that is actually monitored when it comes to those economics. The overstatement of the 481, I stated it. This is based on holes which were drilled some years ago by the former Sukov. It's just an estimate, and I think, Honorable, if there's any, you have mentioned the word estimate. You could, in geological terms, you could just say some estimate of a resource. You still have a long, long way to go and quantify it and make it a reserve. That is why we need to do exploration and determine what is the actual reserve. Okay? The issue of saying it has been estimated at 40 TCF, it's fine. I said to you earlier on, you know, even if we get 30 TCF, that means we have got 30 most gases in the country. Do the economic modeling of that. It will change the country. It will have a positive impact on the country. And I think what is critical here is we have to move on and do the exploration, assess what we have, and then make appropriate decisions when we reach there. The monitoring team, as I earlier mentioned, the names of the departments which I have listed there, they form the core, because the heart of our problems is around environment and water, and other departments will be brought in as when we move on. They will be brought in. We interact. There are government processes which we follow whenever we do any activities of this kind. We've got clusters, you know, we interact with them. And when there's a need for a particular department to come in and play a role, they will be co-opted. The minister will be consulted on this issue, and that will happen. It should not be a problem. In terms of monitoring, I referred to the Water Act. Department of Water Affairs will be playing a critical role in this regard, in terms of monitoring. We can even have schedules on how the monitoring will take place. But they are going to play a major, major role in terms of ensuring that the operators adhere to the Water Act. Not necessarily the MPRD. As I said, if you remember, there's a slide here where I showed various legislation. I said, you know, there's the Water Act, there's the NEMA. So there's a whole suite of legislation which will still be administered by various departments. But because departments are out there, we need to bring them together in the common forum, as we do that monitoring team, which will be the common forum, to monitor the activity of shaking development. The issue of excess capacity, certainly we realize that we need to strengthen our capacity when it comes to this issue. We will interact with people who are already advanced when it comes to this matter. We have, in fact, already started interacting with countries which are already advanced on this matter. We will ensure that our officials are trained accordingly and are provided with the necessary skills to ensure that this activity takes place in a sustainable manner. It should not be a problem. And also, honourable members, we have got to look at the situation like this: that, you know, this project will be implemented in phases. Okay. After issuing the license, there will be some time before they even start fracturing. It will take some time, perhaps plus minus or 3 years or so. It depends from project to project. So there will still be an initial phase of exploration where they will be, you know, undertaking normal exploration, understanding the geology, understanding this slide which I showed today. You know, there's another process which they've got to go through before they can even fracture. So it could be plus minus 3 years before they can even say, let's start fracturing. It depends from project to project. So there is a lot of time for us to ensure that this collaborative platform, you know, is strengthened. And I think, again, this will succeed if all stakeholders work together on this matter, especially government, private sector, all the affected stakeholders should actually also be part of the process to ensure that we deliver on this project. I thank you.
Okay. Honorable members, now I see your hand, honorable members. My fear is that we may not finish here. Let me just raise some of the issues that are of concern to me. The first issue is that this is, I must be honest, DG, is a draft. And
there is no intended legislation. It's about regulation. And I'm not sure as the committee how far we could go to deal with the draft, which when they are presented here, we may be told that we are dealing with something that is not final. My main worry is that in the report on its own is not giving us certainty that this is what is going to happen. Now, I'm looking at the process also that you have suggested in your background in terms of public interaction, which you said you want to have those regulations for public input by the 15th of October. Is it the writing that is correct, wrong, or is it me who was assuming that it's 2014? Because it says here they are for 2013. Okay. It says on the 15th October 2013. I read it with the understanding of 2014, not 2013. It means it's a post process in terms of that. But also the process of consultation with affected community. But one thing that was a concern, DG, I kept this thing where it says, yes, where it says, I think it's in your slide 23. Now, the problem is that what becomes difficult for the department to prescribe rather than to expect that those who will be doing will disclose. But those are two different things. If you read 23, your slide, they say it provides for the disclosure of hydraulic fracturing fluids to be used, i.e. fluids and their status as hazardous or non-hazardous. Now, I assume it may then say they will have a right, those will be undertaking the exercise, to disclose. Not the other way around, where there is prescription for them on what is expected to be used. Simple, we say, for instance, non-hazardous. You don't get a sense that that says the prescription will be. It's like it will come from that side. You will then say, having disclosed what you will be using, we will then determine why do you want to take that risk, as an example. But one of the most difficult things, and I think I must say this, honorable members, is that there is this both team and committee, call it monitoring. My fear is that we are dealing with the Department of Mineral Resources. But this seems to be just at a, if one were to use the word, at a geological exploration level, that becomes DMR. But with the multiplicity of departments, it seems to be making it to be more complex. Well, my question then becomes, it may not necessarily be similar to what Honorable Member One was asking about the final determinant, but is that the possibility of this committee, I'll make an example. There is a committee, there will be a committee that deals with issues that relate to waste or whatever you call it, and the environment. Now, the risk here is that this committee might be placed in a situation where it may, if it does, in the final, take a decision on environmental impact, where there is a committee that deals, a committee on environment. I'm saying we might be caught in that balancing exercise on in the final analysis. But my main worry is that the difficulty I'm having, even the point that the Honorable Estesen was raising, is that if one were to summarize without watering down DG or what you presented, it's still an envisaged process, not a qualified process. And we will have to get clarity on that. But now let me say for the last question, Honorable Lawrence, this one is a privilege question because we will have to finally have to move. I'm just saying when the DG does this, because it will also include this, so he has to take those things into consideration. Honorable Lorimer, Honorable Stephen, anyone who wants now. Okay. But obviously, DG, I can give you this one. I don't think it's the last time on this one we are meeting. Because where there is no certainty, there has to be certainty so that we act on that. Honorable Lorimer?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think you will agree that this is a matter of huge public interest and importance, and if we do have a game changer on our hands, we must make sure we do it right. And therefore, I think it's important that we interrogate all the issues thoroughly. DG, I want to move on to coalbed methane, which does appear to be something of a different animal. Even from your diagram, which is on the screen at the moment, we can see that coalbed methane is much more shallow. And in fact, on your diagram, it intersects with the water table, the aquifer. Do you believe that there is a greater risk of contamination from coalbed methane? And if you do, what steps are you planning to take to mitigate that risk? As my time is limited, I then just want to finish off by going back to the regulations and when we're going to see them. It sounds from what you're saying that there is not yet a final date when we will see the revised regulations. Is that correct? If I'm wrong, when is the final date that we will actually see the regulations?
Thank you, Chair. Oh, and heavens knows we need energy in this country. Apart from the contamination that might be part of Shell's exploration, there's also the protection of our natural resources, and water being one of the most precious ones in this country. And you agreed, sir, that seawater would be uneconomical, but still, in dry areas, Karoo, I mentioned it before, operation used just under 20 million litres per operation for water injection drilling. Where's that water going to come from? From the immediate area, that will be the most economical. And this is in dry area. I think the Honourable colleague Mandela asked this before, how many jobs is it going to create? In America, it's claimed that 400,000 jobs was created through fracking, and it contributed to 30% of the economy. And we don't know if this is also exaggerated, but it will in this country also mean jobs, and it will mean, and we have an energy crisis, but it will also, our natural resources like water will also be exploited. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member. Honorable Chair, I just wanted to tackle the issue of water. Qatar, which is a complete desert, even more dry than the Karoo, uses a different fluid to extract water. In fact, they use nitrogen there. And the point that is to be made is that to fracture, you don't
only use the natural resources as is the case with the fresh water. There are other fluids that will be considered, and as the DG indicated, at the point of application, the applicant would have done their pre-feasibility study, and they would bring in their application what source of fluids they would be using, and they would demonstrate to the department which sources of fluids they would be using, and those can be anything, and there's quite a range of those. So I think it is important that we share with you that it is not only water and the 20 million liters. Yes, indeed, ordinarily it would be 20 million liters on average, but it does not have to be water, groundwater or fresh water. There's a range of fluids that can be used. Thank you very much.
Okay. I just wanted to say, if it's not water, with the chemicals, that usually it's the majority of the fluid that's used in injection drilling is water, sand, and some chemical. But 95% is water. And if you use any other substance, like seawater, for instance, the salt content is more bigger risk for contamination. Anything else that you use apart from water adds additional risk to contamination. So water is the natural thing to use. That's what I use all over, actually, in the world, in America, in the world.
That's why I said this thing that shouldn't we wait until they come back with certainty and answer? So that's exactly the point that you are raising. They can account for it. Now you want to, you see, now your honorable members, they want to go to Qatar. No, I think the point, though, is simple. And we see that when you go back, you must also have an understanding that there has to be certainty in this area. The point whether you say you'll use water or there's a use of any other, and which is why Honorable Estevan says, in his convicted view, is that any other, so that we deal with that aspect. But I don't want us to sit here and say, surely you will use, so that we also look at the risk factors, like if you don't use water, how much research work will then have been done in relation to the alternative pressures that will be taken into consideration. But that's why I was saying my fear is that at this stage with the presentation, it's much more speculative rather than to be certainty. So that even if there's comment, we know that we are looking for this, rather than to say, now if you use chemical, then it comes in, no, we have not said chemical, our primary will be water. And when we say this, then it shifts. I'm not saying that's what is being done or that's what it will be done. But we think that when this process comes back, we get that opportunity, we must then be submitted with a process that provides certainty on what we're actually dealing with. But I'm sure you'll answer also the processes that our suggested. Well, the other risk, honorable members, is that as I'm sitting here, I'm asking myself that what is the work that is being done by the committee and the team, and what are the possibilities that the project might remain relevant and correct, but changes in the process might take place based on the interventions that was. I think whether we like it or not, in the final analysis, we'll have to ask that question. Besides the interaction or the interrelations of departments, what could be the possible interventions of committees that may come with different conclusions? I don't know how that process is going to be handled, because
maybe we should ask that question, probably direct. Whether have you presented in any committee? Or is this process being presented in any committee by any department? Because my fear if this issue is handled, for an example, by, I doubt, but science and technology, it will go to their committee. I'm not sure. But if it has gone to, what is this, water and sanitation, or environmental affairs, they may be going the other process way, maybe in response to this. If you can clarify that issue, I think it will also assist the committee to develop a better approach and strategy on how best to handle even the contributions on the process itself.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Chair, we will be ready to come back again with the to the committee to present to you. Certainly, what has happened is that the document which is currently in the public is the draft document of which was published in November 2013. That is why you've got that November 2013 there. And we have received input from various stakeholders, written input to that document. What we will do is we once that process has reached a stage whereby we have finalized it, we'll be ready to engage with the committee to discuss the matter further, but it will actually also be published. In terms of, you refer to the issue of disclosure requirement, it touches on the whole issue of saying various companies have indicated that they have got their own types of fluids which they will use. So we couldn't, our approach was say, okay, if these are the types of fluids which are, we have got various types of fluids which are going to use, they will have to disclose them, and then they'll be subject to interrogation by scientists and say, what impact will these fluids have on the environment? That is the approach which we took. We said, let's allow the companies to present their own fluids, because everybody says, I've got this mixture, this one, I'm using this mixture, I'm using this mixture. So we said, let's avoid prescribing to them that you'll use this type of fluids. Let's allow them to present to us, and then our scientists will then interrogate those fluids, the mixtures which are there, and see what type of impact they will have on the environment and how we can ensure that the environment is mitigated. This is the approach which we are taking. On the issue of, in short, Chair, we will be available to interact with the committee at any time. It is going to be a long process. And I always say this, it's a long process from exploration, the initial phases of exploration as they take place, we'll have real exploration which will take place even if we find that we've got economic shale gas, the issue of production will be there, will be available at any time to brief the committee on this process. The issue of Honorable Lorima, you mentioned that the game changer. It is certainly a game changer. It will change the economy of this country. I certainly have got no doubt about that. It will certainly change the economy of the country. And on, you referred to coal bed methane. Each and every type of gas deposit has got its own challenges. So what is important here is that we need to understand the type of environment and mitigate against that environment. It will be different. The geology is different from one area to the other. So you'll have to understand that. You see, in this area, if it's coal bed methane, you have got to look at it and say, coal bed methane in this area, what are the environmental impacts which will be which will care when you exploit coal bed methane, and you put systems in place to mitigate that. So it will be differ from place to place, but also the whole issue of hydraulic fracturing, if it has to be used, then if we decide now we're going to use it now, it will also be governed by this regulation in terms of the casing standards, in terms of the cement standards. That's why they are so important. They are extremely important to protect the integrity of the environment in terms of exploitation of shale gas. They are much shallower, yes, certainly very close to the water table. We have to ensure that that happens. But you might find that some shale gas, some methane gases, coal bed gases, don't interact with aquifers. You know? So it will differ from place to place. The issue of the issue of the seawater from Honorable Ustis, and I think it has been addressed there. You know, we are saying, let's listen to the people. Let's listen to the operator. Okay? Let's hear them. Let's let them present to us what they will do. It's just like in mining. Okay? If someone says, I've discovered a gold mine, okay, what do you do? You say, okay, you have discovered a gold mine. Tell us how you are going to mine this gold. Okay? If there is gold, you say, tell us. Some person will say, no, I'm going to mechanize. I'm going to use this. I'm going to use this type of equipment. Then we look at it from that sense and say, yes, it makes sense. Similarly here, if someone comes to us and say, I want to exploit this, they must tell us how they're going to exploit it, you know? If this person says, I'm going to use seawater, we'll have to say to this person, tell us how you'll do that. Is it economic? What are the intents? So you allow the applicant to tell you how they think they will exploit these resources. You don't tell people, even in mining, you say, okay, you have got a copper resource here. You will mine it this way. No, you allow people to come with proposals. Then from there, you say, no, I think your proposal is not correct. Maybe do this and this and this. Then they go back to the engineers and technicians and say, but, you know, government is not happy with this and this. Let's do this and this. That is how successful projects are realized. Thank you.
Just clarity, Mr. Chair. So am I understanding there that the individual conditions of a particular operation will be contained in the license given for that, that particular application, not necessarily in the overall regulations?
The overall regulation will provide the generic critical issues which must be there, as I said, the casing standards, everybody must adhere to them. The cement, everybody must adhere to those standards. But because projects will be occurring in different terrains, geological terrains, okay, you have to customize the mitigation of the environment according to what you see there. So it has got its own sort of even a EMP of some kind. And say, in terms of this environment, I'm going to, in terms of this geological terrain which I'm going to encounter here, I'm going to mitigate the environment in this way, in this way, in this way, in this way. Thank you.
Honorable Lorimat and Dr. Ramonja. Maybe it's because every time I buy a car, I buy a car that is a manual so that I can change gear. I hope you are not driving automatic. That's all I can say. When you make a follow-up, I must first recognize you. Now I can see you are like a turbocharged. Even when you asked, you said follow-up, before I could say, okay, you are already there.
even the DG, before I could say, are you going to, is already responding. But I can see you are warming up. Okay, honorable members, I like your spirit. I think we must agree that we have to work with on this project very closely. I don't think the committee can run away on its responsibilities. There's no doubt. There's a lot of interest on this. And we shouldn't shy away. I've always maintained one thing. You'll never resolve anything by avoiding it. You have, even if it means it's dividing you, at least you will know what makes you to be divided. Rather than to hide things and then fear to be divided, and then you don't know. You end up not, maybe you are divided by language, or you are divided by what you say, but you may be sharing the same view. So we want to be very close to this process. Secondly, I think we must agree there is a need to do follow-ups. I thought you were going to answer that question. What work is being done in other committees, or have you been invited in other committees? I know on the NCOPs, so that we can, you say, I don't want a situation where I'm just making an example. This committee says, no, we think it's okay. Or this committee says, no, it's not okay, you need to do. Then another committee comes on the other side, says, no, there's a problem here. Now, it may link to, I think it's your Honorable Lauren Mowers raising that issue, where another committee will say, no, it's a no-go area because of environmental implications. I'm just making an example. On this side, you say, no, sharp, we think it's the best because of this. Or we take a decision, an environmental decision, on behalf of another, the environmental committee, that we make it difficult for them to say, no, wait, this is correct, we are satisfied, we're not the other side. So I'm saying we just have to find a way. That's why I was asking. In terms of the process, because it's not the monitoring committee that is presenting here, or team, it's the department. Maybe if it was the committee, which is an issue we'll have to go back and choose, that was briefing us, it would be easy to make a conclusion or a decision on the matter. But now still the department. Have you, that's that question, have you or are you aware of other processes, even if they are not handled by the department, that are taking place on this matter? There was an issue that was brought in about agriculture. There's the issue of DTI and so forth.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and my apology for not addressing that question. The project is led by the Department of Mineral Resources. We have not interacted with any other committee. In fact, it's the first time that we interact with a committee, with yourselves. We have not interacted, and there are no plans yet to interact with any other committee. That will be, if the committee feels that they would like to invite other committee members, perhaps they could consider that. But for now, we have not interacted with any other committees. Only yourselves who we have interacted. The process will, from now on, as I said earlier on, we're going to consult with community, and after that, I think the minister will give guidance on the way forward to be publishing the regulation. So at this stage, you are the only committee which we have interacted with.
Okay. Now we will see how to handle, but in my view, I think I accept the issue about the primary or the lead department. But I was looking even on the proposal, on the form of legislation that are taken into consideration in the project itself, that they don't necessarily fall under DMR. They fall in other departments. So that's why I was saying, are you aware of other processes, or how do those departments handle this issue in there? But I think I get the point of saying, okay. Honorable members, I think we will stick. We will, I think at some point we will have to, but before you finalize this
the request in the committee that can you be ready to come back when there is certainty on the prophecy, so that we talk now being convinced or definite of this data. On that note, thank you very much with the presentation. You are not arrested, so I can't say you are released. You are free to pursue the other matters of departmental interest that you have. Except to say, I must declare, no, it's not a gift. There's a parcel for you here. I would have raised it, but it's written. But in as much as I may remain with the copy, I think that this parcel is more relevant. And it's written. My request is that when I respond to it, I'll be responding in writing to say I've forwarded it to you as a department to respond. Now, it's not a difficult thing, Honorable Member. It's similar to the issues that we're talking about here. But it's directed to the committee, but it says the department. And I think it will be more appropriate if it's handled by the department in those questions that are asked here. But my appeal is that please respond on those questions in writing and forward the copy back so that we can... I don't want people to say we corresponded to you and you kept quiet as if there is nothing we are giving you. I will explain the process. On that note, Honorable Members, can we now go to the summary of activities? A minute. We are only submitting the minutes of the minutes of the 30th of July. That we have to deal with. Honorable Members, page 1. We're dealing with corrections, ne? Page 2. Then on matters arising, yes. Regrettable Honorable Daga is not here. And you are not in the meeting. So difficult to resolve that. But as usual, like the others that are not here now, if it's not written, difficult. I'm sure next time you will be telling those who did not submit the written apologies why they don't appear. You did? Oh, now I understand. You will then explain to Honorable Mdaga when it's her turn now to ask that question. Okay. On manners, on. No. Oh, okay. My friend.
Why are you running away? Oh. Any move of the minute as a true reflection of the discussion? Another Brumandel.
Thank you, sir. I move for the adoption of the minutes as they appear to be a true reflection of the meeting. Thank you, sir.
Any seconder? No, you can, Honorable Stephen. There's no way. Only two members can help us here. It's Honorable Lorima and Honorable Mafolo. Honorable Mafolo?
I second the adoption.
Okay.
Please press on the mic.
Yeah. For record purposes.
I second the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you. Matters arising. Point three surely will not be matters arising, eh? Except on the resolutions on number five. We can do it quite simple by going straight on the resolution, which is number five. Or if you want, because one of the things that I think it's efficient to a certain degree is that you'll never have matters being stale because there are recommendations all the time rather than matters arising. Otherwise, we'd be saying these are outstanding issues. Any matters arising? My suggestion on matters arising, it will be on number five, all the recommendations. One, there is an issue on the information to be supplied or provided by state diamond trader on a, which is the full information requested. I still have to check. I was told even when we were there on the strat plan that they've submitted the information. I will try and then look at that information and bring it back to honorable members of the House. That also goes with regards to the information. I think the department also confirmed that with the required information, they do need it. They did submit it. As and when I've gone through, I will have to check. Now, the secretary next to me, you can see with the expression that is surprised. I'm talking about what we were told that they've supplied. So until then, I will come back. So it remains an outstanding matter. I can do that. On the issue with regards to the strat plan, I'm sure we've said we'll submit the the comprehensive program. One issue, honorable members, I'm worried now when we are so depleted like this. You remember in the strat plan, that one, it's as urgent as yesterday. Is it the 20? What is it? September 22nd to the 20th, that week, you remember there's that issue of the oversight. I don't want dedicated and committed members of this committee to even be second guessed. I know you're very committed. You like you what you are doing. But you remember the issue is that that week on Wednesday, it's a public holiday, which means it takes one day off. Now, the question should be simple. Do we go and ignore that there's a public holiday and work as usual? And how are we going to repay you for that day? There are two options that one has, is that we continue, we leave on Monday, we continue, we develop a program, which means we'll have to deal with it, and then up until Friday, and then we see that must include either a Wednesday or a Wednesday becomes more of a relaxed day. I don't know how we can do it much better. Or we use that Wednesday. And then, because you'll be so committed, we may consider to give you one Wednesday as a refund of that day. I know that in the afternoon, surely you will be having a, what do you call it? You'll be having a plenary. That's what becomes the technical part of it.
even if we're to say we don't give you, we excuse another Wednesday. So I think the only issue is that how do we handle the public holiday?
We must honor the public holiday in the church. There's no way in which you can work on holiday.
Sorry, Chair. I think we must honor the public holiday as members of Parliament. We must be exemplary to the people of South Africa that holiday is holiday. We don't have to go to work. Moreover, it's a heritage day. Heritage day that we must go to all events organized by the Department of Arts and Culture to celebrate the heritage of our own. So, in my own view, we must not undertake the trip on holiday to do other work than to do the heritage of our own, celebrate our own selves. So it will be necessary, Chair, to honor the Heritage Day. I will rest my case. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Lorima and Honorable Mafola.
Mr. Chair, I've got a slightly different problem.
Mandela, after that.
2 weeks ago, we were told it was going to be a constituency week. I've already got an appointment on Tuesday. Wednesday, of course, I concur that I have Heritage Day activities in my constituency. This does, for me anyway, leave Thursday and Friday. Is there a way that we can do a very quick and easy oversight over something? I'm just thinking perhaps illegal mining in Johannesburg or something at the department in Pretoria. Wouldn't take more than 2 days.
Honorable Mafola.
Thank you, Chairperson. I support my team. I'll do it for my team.
The chief, Booth, not a king.
Oh, the chief, yeah, Mr. Booth.
Honorable Mandela.
Thanks, Chair. I think perhaps for me, an interest would be to understand and establish what is to be achieved in terms of the oversight and how long is the oversight anticipated to take. You know, we're talking about 2 days, which Honorable Lorima seems to think it can fit on a Thursday and a Friday, or are we talking 3-4 days? If we understand what the parameters are in terms of what we ought to achieve on oversight, then we know whether to shift it forward or backwards. I think if you can guide us in terms of that, then we would be able to contribute. Thank you.
Look, honorable members, let's start with this one. Eh? The Heritage Day, there's no one who will celebrate it. And I agree 100% with Honorable Matlala. The question is where. So we shouldn't create an impression that if I'm making an example, if we happen to be in Limpopo, there will be no activities of celebrating Heritage Day. In fact, that could be an opportunity to be exposed in other forms of heritage celebration. So that one, it's a definite. So even if you were to go to the northwest, you will experience. It's just to look at what will be the activities or events, particularly that might be relevant in the industry or in the sector where you sit as a portfolio committee chair and a portfolio committee member and a whip, all of us. But the issue remains is what Honorable Lorima has raised. One, I'm not sure, Secretary, I think that issue was really here, there, that we're going to have 2 weeks constituency, a 2 week constituency period. Now it seems to have changed, but then the next issue is that the following week, which is 26th, onwards is a constituency week, so it's out. The third point is that, which is the point that Honorable Lerma is raising also, is that can we really undertake a trip that goes outside to only spend 2 days and come back and say we are doing an oversight? I am very skeptical because I don't want also to be used to this thing of tampering with weekends. I think that one we should just at all cost avoid, so that you can go back and be with your family. We don't want this committee to be an excuse for people to run away from their family responsibilities. So we're in a catch-22. For me, if there was consensus, I see the invitation, but very silent, very silent. The invitation by Honorable Lorimer that come to Gauteng on those 2 days. we can take that into consideration. But my main worry, can we suggest this, if other committee members agree, that if we take the 2 days, let's just agree, surely we can't take the platinum belt. It's out, frankly. You can't go there for 2 days and then say you come back with information. We can opt for what Honorable Lorimer says. Look at the areas of Gauteng. You remember those things that we talked about. Look at the, what do you call, all the entities, how the setup is, the issues that relate to acid water, mine drainage. We look at those activities. And probably, especially myself and Inkosi, now there is another Inkosi that we're not aware, look at a possible convening a meeting with the tradition, because there is the House of the Traditional Leaders, or even as a committee as a whole, we don't think it's a problem. Look at the possibility of convening in the meeting now in terms of building those relations. At what time is another issue with the House of Traditional Leaders, which, as I'm told, is based in, their offices are based in Pretoria, but they're in Gauteng. I'm just saying, for the 2 days, then it means we can arrive on Wednesday, on the public holiday, after having celebrated heritage, if it's possible, Secretary, to twist the program in relation to that. The issue then, it means we will have, you remember, the point that Honorable Lorimer was talking about, that in that program of Gauteng, it can include an oversight visit, which means we're shifting the dates, because we remember we said by October we must have gone on the issue of acid, of illegal mining. So we take the issue now of illegal mining, that's what we suggest, we bring it forward and be part of those two-day activities. You understand, sir? And be part of those two-day activities. It means now we take and shift that issue of the platinum belt to be a second option of the visit. If that is the case, I think it's okay with me. But I don't want to say it's mine. But I thought that's what members are suggesting. I think we can do more justice if we undertake illegal mining, the issue of the entities, in particular acid mine drainage, then the meeting with traditional leaders. We then, you can work then the program on how do we deal with that. And then we say the second part of the oversight visit will then be on the platinum belt, which in my view it will require from Monday to Friday. You need those 4 days. Then we'll look at the period, what will be the period that we can use in relation to that. If it requires, it's more urgent, it requires that we meet with the, what do you call it? We meet with the with all the stakeholders in the area, including the before we go, we meet with the house chair and look at areas of flexibility because of agency. We can see whether we can be excused during the sittings of parliamentary sittings. One issue, though, honorable members, I think we will have to come back to you. If that week, again, it's a committee week,
it means our committee on Wednesday will not be sitting. You remember when it's committee week, we are supposed to do the activities, and our committee meeting is on Wednesday. Now, we're going to use the committee week for oversight activities. Does that suggest then the Tuesday is a bonus for you to stay and relax, or we fit in something? Do you want to help Secretary?
I'm a bit confused when you put it.
Now, let me put it simple for you. I'm saying that week that now we're saying we're taking only 2 days is a committee week, isn't it? Now, yes, committees, yes, that's why I'm saying committee week. We had decided then on that week that we are going to do an oversight. Now, it's now having a public holiday on a Wednesday. And this committee meets on a Wednesday, which therefore means there is no committee. Even if we're going to have a meeting, there will be no meeting of the committee because it's a public holiday. Now, we have already taken Thursday and Friday. Does that suggest Monday is a constituency day? Then we're left with Tuesday. That's such, because these members tomorrow must not leave and then hear that they were supposed to be here because there is no holiday. That's the issue I wanted you to clarify. What do we do then on Tuesday?
Unfortunately, too, on Tuesday, the members will go to their committees that they are serving because it's not our slot, so we can't meet as a committee on that week, the PC on Mineral Resources. They will go to their other committees. Unless if there's an urgent matter, but it's unlikely that the House Chair will approve because we are only allocated Wednesday, not any other.
So it says, Honourable Member, if your committee is not having an activity, you will have Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. That's what I'm leaving you with. It means if you want to, you can mobilize now. But here, comrades, honorable members, we will meet next week when we are giving you the final, including the program, of the Thursday and Friday. Is there, or then quickly, there are just few announcements that I thought I must do quickly. The first one, I will not be doing justice. There is an invitation from the Chamber of Mines, the president of the Chamber of Mines. It says, I just want to read the part. As the president of the chamber, I humbly request that you grace us with your presence and members of your committee at a working lunch on the 10th of September at 12:30. So the invitation, the letter is long. They say they are convening a council meeting on the, in Cape Town. So they just request you between 12:30, I think, and 2 o'clock, just to be. We will be the secretary said the Stanhouse. Oh, they have not written yet. Yeah, the secretary will communicate with you. Then I think there is a continuing. What do you call it? Yeah, colloquia. English. Colloquium on beneficiation is continuing. Started on the 26th, 27th. It's also at the Good Hope Chambers. You are invited by the Trade and Industry.
29.
Okay, so you are told now, the second, or here on the program, it's reflected the second. So you are invited there. Then there's a memorandum from the DG's office. But we are not written on this as respondents.
But I think it's the memorandum that was submitted during the mining Lekgotlan. It's a memorandum of demands. It's directed to the Chamber of Mines, Department of Mineral Resources, to the Minister himself, Ngwakora Matodi, to the Parliament of South Africa and the President of South Africa. It's written, I think it's the mining communities. I'm sure we'll find a way of how we handle it, because sometimes when it says Parliament, it means it must go through to the Speaker. And then the Speaker who refers it to the committee that it can handle it. So I think the only way we will try, Secretary, is to refer this to the Speaker. Then if the Speaker says we must continue, we must handle it, then we will bring it back to the committee. That's what we suggest it be done. On that note, honorable members, without any further ado, thank you very much. See you next week, Wednesday.